That chant that we sang earlier that we all, I guess, had to deeply focus on, the Master's love for me, is a chant that was written, I believe, somebody correct me if I'm wrong, but by Dr. Lewis, is that right?
Yes, right.
Who was one of Yogananda's early disciples in the United States, and he stayed very deeply devoted to Master throughout Master's life, throughout all of his life, I'm sure. But the words to that song, of course, I never have any idea what chants anybody's going to do, but so silently and sweetly the Master comes to me, and then later, in all-pervading silence, he whispers, I am here. It's it just so completely captures the essence of this reading. One of those days where I wonder, should I just ask them to keep playing it for 25 minutes? And let us just go into it, because, you know, what the chant is saying, what the reading's saying, what is so important here is that it's really, it's not with our mind that we will feel these teachings or feel our deep connection with the Master. There's no way that these great gurus can come to us in that way. It's in this all-pervading silence. It's when we are drawn to truth and joy that's vibrating in their heart, and we recognize it in ourself, and it's our heart to their heart. So it so perfectly happens in music in a way that it can't happen through any other kind of teaching. And if we just listen to that chant over and over until those words become pure vibration, which is really what we try and do every week with our affirmation. That's why we do it loudly, then quieter and quieter. We're not letting it go. We're going so deep inside with it, so much to the core of the vibration of these extraordinary words that Swamiji's written, or Dr. Lewis has written. It was just, it's so moving. You know, on Wednesday, September 12th, it was the anniversary of Swami Kriyananda's first meeting and discipleship with Paramahansa Yogananda. The very day he met him, he was given the discipleship vows. Master, when I say Master, I mean Yogananda, for any of you who are new, Paramahansa Yogananda, on whose teachings all of Ananda is based through Swami Kriyananda, who lived with him, Swami Kriyananda, here, everywhere today. Here, there, everywhere. Usually he's only over there, but today we have him everywhere because we just celebrated this very auspicious day, September 12th, when he met him and was immediately given a discipleship vow. And you know, many of us in this room have heard the story of how that happened so often. But when I was reading the reading today, and how beautifully it coincides with the discipleship, I'm going to come back to Swami's meeting Master, but where I was headed just now, because it struck me when I walked out, this altar is so exquisite. It's just so exquisite. And the other night, with the lights low and candles burning, we could have all just sat here and stared at the altar. And really, we felt so close to Swamiji and Yogananda through this. But today, when I walked out, I'm going to turn around and walk back to the altar for a minute. I was so drawn. Look at this incredible flower. You know, you have to come up and feel it. I mean, the whole altar And here it is in different shades of itself. Where did that flower come from? It spoke to, I think, Atmajyoti, did you do this altar? Yeah. She would say she didn't do it. I'll bet she'll say Swamiji and Master did it through her. That flower is so amazing to me. And these stories, forgive me, there's such a flood of inspiration that was never meant to be talked about today, but there you have it. You know, when Swami Kriyananda was, he was on a search throughout this whole life. The title of this talk is Truth Invites, It Never Commands. Swamiji often referred to what he was looking for as truth. Even sometimes, I mean, he would use the word God, he used the word conscious and consciousness, but he often called it truth. And when he was living in New York at one point, or at least they're visiting his parents, but I think he was living there, he was looking for books. He was trying to learn, and interestingly, he was trying to learn a little bit more about Eastern religion, because he hadn't been able to find what he was looking for yet. And he went into Doubleday Bookstore on Fifth Avenue, I believe, in New York City. And he picked this book, called to him, this picture of Master. And he said, I had never seen a face that spoke to me so clearly, that had such compassion, such truth and honesty in it. But he opened the book up, and right in the front, it says, this book is dedicated to Luther Burbank, an American saint. And Swamiji just said, how preposterous. There can't be a saint that would come from all of this materialism. And he had a few other words. He just put the book down. He was going to have none of it. It's fascinating to me, coming back to the flower, because as you all know, Luther Burbank created, I don't know how many flowers, tens of thousands of different type species of flowers. He would blend things and make them happen, including the spineless cacti. You know, that was all his doing. He later said it was the hardest thing in his life. He was constantly being injured by them. They were in his clothes. He said he suffered so much. Later in his life, he said, I'd never have the courage to do those experiments again. But from that came this, all these varieties of spineless cacti. I mean, these flowers that nobody could imagine except God. He invited, in his own words, truth invites, he invited the cactus to let go of its spine. Isn't that amazing? And it did. They did. Eventually, just like I look at this flower and I think, who invited this flower in? It's just so unusual and beautiful. But Swami walked out of that bookstore. He walked out. So silently and sweetly, the Master calls my name. Swami couldn't hear it right then. But a week, 2 weeks later, I don't remember, he was trying to leave New York. And he literally kept being called back, silently and sweetly. The Master calls my name. And he went back to Doubleday, and he picked up this book. He didn't want to. He was trying to leave. He said, my body kept being turned. That's not so silent, but it was still sweet. Master just said, no, no, honey, you're mistaken. You don't get it. Come on with me. And he did. He heard that, and he went. And he picked up this book. And then, of course, we all know this story, or many of us do, but for those of you who might be new, he read it in 3 or 4 days, got on a bus, went out to San Diego first, couldn't find Yogananda there, got on another bus, went up to Los Angeles, found him, and after a sequence of miraculous events, he became a disciple of Yogananda. And here we are celebrating that day, You know, Asha said it very beautifully the other night. I don't have her exact words. It doesn't matter. We were all feeling it. We wouldn't be here. I don't know where we'd be from that spark, from that quiet moment of turn around on Fifth, come back to Fifth Avenue, comes all of what we know as Ananda all over the world, comes the inspiration for this extraordinary altar, comes the inspiration to be singing that beautiful song of all of the chants that could have been sung, God calling to each of us in our own way. Yesterday I was watching Rita and Stephen dance up here. It was so beautiful. God's call to them through this dance, the music. There was a concert here yesterday. Just calling. Are we listening? Are we quiet enough? Can we pay attention? Sister Gyanamata, who was Master's foremost female disciple, said in one of her many letters, listen for God's voice, but you have to let go of the noise of the world or you might miss him. Now, what we know is she's not talking about move away from the trains or the airplanes or the bustle on Fifth Avenue. Swamiji heard it right on Fifth Avenue. She's talking about the noise of the world that runs over and over in our minds. All of the desires, the likes, the dislikes, the opinions, the judgments. We have to let go of that. Not easy. I wanted to read to you. Now I'm getting back to where I thought I would be. This reading, a little bit of a reading from the autobiography of the yogi that Swamiji read, that has brought us all here. I've tried to paraphrase this many times before, and it's so dear how it's written. So Paramahansa Yogananda found his guru, who was Sri Yukteswar, at a rather young age, as a teenager, and he went to live with him in his ashram. And he decided, Paramahansa Yogananda, who was not even really Yogananda yet at this time, but he decided that he had to go into the Himalayas to find God. Here he was living with a fully realized being. And in his mind, he knew that. I'm just trying to show us how quietly God calls to us and how the true masters invite us, but they'll never command us. So if everything's too noisy here, we don't hear. Yogananda gives us a perfect example. He says, please permit me to go to the Himalayas. He's speaking to his guru. I hope in unbroken solitude to achieve continuous divine communion. And then he says, I actually once addressed these ungrateful words to my master. He's writing this book many years later, and he's saying to us, what was I thinking? Really, I'm in the home of a master. But you know, what Sri Yukteswar says back to him is so touching and meaningful, so silent, so sweet. He says to him, many hillmen live in the Himalayas, yet possess no God perception. Wisdom is better sought from a man of realization than from an inert mountain. Ignoring Master's plain hint, Yogananda says, was hardly even a hint, that he and not a hill was my teacher, the master, not the inert mountains, I repeated my plea. So what happens? Sri Yukteswar vouchsafed no reply, and I took his silence for consent, a precarious interpretation readily accepted at one's convenience. It's quiet. It's subtle. These are how these lessons are. Swami Kriyananda was a master at this, literally masterful. I read a story a couple of weeks ago. I was preparing for a very different talk, but it was such a beautiful story. I didn't see where it came from, but it probably came from Asha's book, Swami Kriyananda, as we have known him, about a woman who didn't yet know Swami Kriyananda, but she had had periods of severe depression in her life and in and out of depression. And she found her way up to Ananda Village. And one day she was up near Crystal Hermitage, which is where Swami Kriyananda lived. There's beautiful gardens there. And there's a beautiful little small temple. Very St. Francis-like temple. I don't even know the name of it, but maybe it is called the St. Francis Temple. I've been in it many times, and I should know the name, but I don't. And this man walked by her and welcomed her and asked her if she was new to Ananda. She had no idea who it was. And he said, "Have you been in this temple yet?" And she said, "No, no." And she wasn't really focused. And he said, "Well, you might want to go in and meditate." And she answered something that was totally distracted. I don't remember what now. She was distracted. And he said, "Well, perhaps you'd like to go in there now and meditate for a few minutes. I just have the thought." And then he left. And it turns out, of course, it was Swamiji. And she walked into the temple. He just walked away. He just planted the seed. There, and she walked into that temple. She said the minute she walked in, she felt surrounded in light. She felt her heart open. Her depression was lifted, and she never again experienced that depression. He didn't say to her, "You go in there." That's not how it works. It invites. God invites us. The invitation is always there. What we're up against is how much noise is going on in our own head so that we cannot hear that beautiful invitation. You know, I had a story that I just lived through in my own life that happened some time ago, not as long ago as I wish it would have happened, but I was at a meeting with a lot of dear friends, and we're not exactly called colleagues, but guru bhais. But we all teach together and we serve together. And I just get to the gist of this story. I was not at my best in this meeting. That's being kind to myself, but having processed this a little bit and having meditated with it, I'm leaning towards being a little more kind. I was a bit of a bully in the meeting. And although I was getting messages in my mind that were saying to me, "Don't say that out loud, Shanti. Don't say it now, Shanti. This isn't the right time." I just decided of my own accord that the things that I needed to say should be said. And then, in fact, it was the right time. It's like not listening, really not listening. And I hurt some people, and I knew I hurt some people. And by the time I got home, I was devastated by the fact that I hurt people. And so I wrote a letter of apology. Then the next morning I woke up and I thought, that really didn't do it. That was not where it should have come from. So I wrote a longer letter of apology. Now, I got on myself in a pretty serious way, as only I can do, with all the drama. I shouldn't say as only I can do. Not fair. Probably we've all been there. The ego jumps in, and it's just this egocentric to decide to tell ourselves how horrible we are. In fact, the ego just loves that. And I started wondering about my whole position in life. You know, these thoughts. How can I teach these teachings? Look at what I just did. How can I share them here? How can I call myself a disciple? How can I? I mean, My ego was having a heyday with me. When I sat to meditate, after about 5 minutes, this comes into my mind. You know, Shanti, Mary Magdalene was a prostitute at one point in her life. Okay? I thought to myself, you know, that was the truth. Yet, she went and she would rub Jesus' feet with oil. She found a way to go to God and to open her heart so that she could receive his grace. Right? And then I remembered another story. I'm just sitting in front of my altar. I remembered the story of Paramahansa Yogananda working with an alcoholic, a really serious alcoholic who always had a bottle in his hand. You know, we've seen people like that. And Yogananda felt inspired to give him Kriya initiation. And that man, for a very long time, held his Kriya beads in one hand and his bottle in the other. And he said, I take a sip of the alcohol, then I run a Kriya bead by. I practice little Kriya. Kriya yoga, by the way, is a form of meditation that we teach here. But it wouldn't even have mattered that it was Kriya in a certain way. It's that Master was helping him meditate. He wasn't saying to him, you have to let go of that alcohol. The man would have never let go of the alcohol. He was saying, let me show you the way to raise your consciousness, to open your heart. Of course, we're all making mistakes. That was a pretty big one that I made. I hurt people. That's a real lesson for me in life. I can make a fool out of myself over and over. I don't like to hurt anyone. Even if what I was saying was the truth, it wouldn't matter. Truth invites, it never commands. We have to realize that. This is how the masters teach us. But I was saying to myself, probably you can teach a little more. Probably you're allowed to keep going in life, even though you just made this horrific mistake, because all of these teachings are directional. They're hard. They're very hard. And Swamiji says, you know, he talks often, it's all throughout the Bible and really in all religions, about these high mountains we're climbing, high mountains, and the degree of, I can't find his word right now, I wish I could, but it's really earnest determination that it takes. It would have been cowardly for me to leave the path at that point. It's much harder to turn around, look in the mirror, come to God and say, okay, I messed up. Keep talking to me. Keep telling me. Keep showing me. I know what I want. I am not going to take the easy way out of here. Where would I go anyway? But I'm here. Hold my hand again. Walk me up that mountain. We all know. The higher up the mountain we go, the steeper it gets. And you know what's at the top of all of these mountains? No joke, anybody here who's ever not just climbed, but taken a hike, scree. These little pebbles and rocks, no foothills. You put one foot up, you slide down three feet. You sometimes wonder if you're going to fall off the mountain. But you keep going because you want what's at the top. And you keep saying to God, keep talking to me, keep whispering, keep holding me. The other day I was meeting with somebody. I was trying to remember when I was listening to that chant, the circumstance, but I can't remember. But I said to this person, you know, I've developed a ritual and it's real and it's there for me. Every night, the very last thing I do before I go to sleep, no matter how awful I've been that day, no matter how many messages I haven't heard, no matter if I've shortened my meditation a little bit, whatever I've done, Master, would you hold me in your arms while I fall asleep? Would you please put your arms around me? Let the last thing that I do tonight be here quietly in that all-pervading silence. Let me hear you. Let me know you. You know, Paramahansa Yogananda had a way about him when anybody would start to argue with him. He would say to them, "You might be right." He never argued back. He would always say, "You might be right." And he often said, "I work best when I can teach by just raising my eyebrow." Just that subtlety. So there's about 10 more stories that I want to tell you, but I'm out of time here. Because, you know, this teaching is so important for us on both sides of it. How quiet we have to get, how much God is there whispering, whispers from eternity, whispering all the time to us, always. It's just, he's not going to hurt us with it, ever. He doesn't make the mistake that I made with my friends that day. He says, "No, I'm here. I love you. I'll always love you. I've always have loved you. Nothing's changed from my end. When you're ready, you turn around and you come to me. When we need you, our beloved, you descend. Our human griefs, your love alone can mend. By proud indifference, unaffected, our pride, our indifference, you remain our friend. By proud indifference, unaffected, you remain our friend. Our job is simply to open our hearts, to keep making room for God's joy, for God's bliss, to draw us, to touch that in us, till the only desire that we know, all the likes, dislikes, desires, opinions, judgment, the only desire that we have is that one huge desire to be in that bliss with the divine."